Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, Christian Clark, for the third episode of the Perspectives Podcast. In this episode, we're going to be talking with Mike Wool, who's a tax attorney, regarding ownership transfer of small farms and how it differs from other types of business transfers. Mike is partner at Langrock, Sperry & Wool, founded in 1980. He works primarily in the area of tax law and commercial transaction, as you had mentioned, a broad-based firm.
Yes.
And then also you are the chair of the New England Board of Higher Education, appointed originally by Governor Dean. And also you sit on the board at SB Manufacturing?
Yes.
Well, that's quite a list of credentials, Mike. Thanks for sharing that with us. I think that just gives people a really good idea of the background that you have and that you're multifaceted and that you should really be able to shed some light on the subject we'll be talking about. It's kind of an interesting thing to think about. You know, how do you do that? How do you make that type of a transition? And there's so many various aspects to think about. I mean, there's the tax conversation, there's the transfer of wealth conversation, there's, you know, the liquidity, you know, and how that works. And so what we want to do today is really think about, you know, what are some of the steps that these families can take, or at least the initial steps that these families can take when they're starting to have this conversation. And it seems like a very daunting topic or thing to take on. And, you know, I think one of the issues that a lot of these small family farms deal with is that finding the time to actually do the research, because somebody's got to be out there actually, you know, doing the work and running the farm. So how do we broach that subject? I mean, what are some of the things initially to just think about in terms of that process?
So if you will bear with me, you broach a subject that's very dear to my heart. And actually, I'm involved in this discussion today because of the folks at Phoenix Feeds that are very much involved in the in agriculture,
yep,
and sustainability of agriculture, because what you presented was really well stated in a daunting paradigm. I'm a many generation Vermonter, and one of the things that moved me early on educationally was reading Turner's Frontier Thesis in 1893, and it posed the dilemma of what happens when you no longer have the frontier. It was something that wasn't going to happen, but it was presented in Chicago back in the 1890s. And I think the same issues that were raised in that very important piece apply to the family farm. I'm fortunate in that I live in Charlotte, Vermont, and I, on my way to work every day, I drive by a number of operating dairy farms, and it just is amazing to me, mind-boggling, what dairy farmers face. It's a 24/7 job. There's no time. They're always on their tractors. And when they're not on their tractors, they're milking the cows. I have a long-term assistant secretary in my Middlebury office, and they're longstanding dairy farmers in Addison County. They own they're the Fifield brothers. And I mean, it's amazing to me. She's in the barn before she comes to work. One of my partners, Pete Langrock, has had an operating farm for years. He always comes into the office in the middle of the summer with a wool suit on after he's been in the barn taking care of his cows, sheep, and horses. On the way here this morning, I was looking at a press release from Vermont Business Magazine, and it kind of illustrates the problem. And the headline is, it's in today's internet disclosure. It was in Vermont Digger, and the title is "Glut of Milk Leads Vermont Farms Co-ops to Dump Product." There's an oversupply of milk is bringing down prices in the Northeast and driving large dairy cooperatives to dump their product in manure pits, and so on. Mm-hmm. It kind of begs the question of so many of the issues that apply to the family farm, large or small, apply to other businesses. The big difference is other businesses have significant cash flow.
Right.
And when the owners are successful, they can, you know, spend time on the lake and have leisure time. It doesn't exist in the farm. There's an interesting statistic, and that is in the next couple of years, the transfer of wealth from the so-called greatest generation, referred to by Tom Brokaw, to the baby boomers will exceed $8 trillion. At the same time, the statistics say that the family farm faces the same challenges in terms of transfer of wealth, but the studies indicate that in American agriculture, only 30% of the family farms will survive. That's a daunting, it's a horrible picture in my mind, because just like the frontier was a, you know, one of the underpinnings of our democracy, I think the family farm is too. Mm-hmm. It's just such an integral part of our society and our existence, and we've got to find ways to preserve it. I had the privilege in the 70s. After law school, I received a master's in tax and had a lot of textbook knowledge and could recite the code, but very little practical experience. And I was taken under the wing of, at the time, a gentleman farmer by the name of Derek Webb. And it really was a privilege. I had the opportunity of working with him in the late 70s and early 80s to help implement the preservation of Shelburne farms. A little bit different from the typical farm in that, it was a kind of a playground for the Vanderbilts early on, but Derek actually did make it a working farm, and he was faced with the same challenges of rising property taxes and you know, how do you make the cash flow work? He brought in Brown Swiss to give himself an edge, but it was a daunting challenge for him. And some of the things we did back then still exist. We looked at the educational aspects. How can we preserve and teach people the importance of agriculture? And the way that was done was they created a 501c, which became Shelburne Farms Resources. They took the big old house mansion and they turned that into an inn that was generates income. They basically created educational programs. They created products that were, that still are there, from the cheeses to the breads, then also using the property in a way that would generate revenues, whether it be concerts, farm rides, harvest shows, that type of thing. The other thing that we did back then was we did some of the first conservation easements in the state of Vermont. We worked with the Nature Conservancy and basically preserved the land. And there were significant tax advantages in terms of doing that. One of the things they did that the family did, and I think it's a template for how best to proceed, is there's all kinds of legal documents and legal processes and procedures you can look at. There's family limited partnerships. There's sales to defective trusts. There's charitable bequests. There's conservation easements. There's charitable remainder trusts. There's all different types of entities. It's kind of like putting the cart before the horse. What really has to happen in my mind is the family has to, the people that are involved in the day-to-day operations, and you really have to do the analysis of what do we have? What does the economic model look like? Who are the players? And what do we want to achieve? And they really have to have frank discussions. And they can pretty much do that amongst themselves. Sometimes it helps to bring a professional in to help motivate and guide the discussion. But I think the first step really has always been the family meeting. One of the things that you need to make a distinction. There's transition planning, there's succession planning, and there's estate planning. They're different things.
Yep.
So, transition planning is dealing with the issues today before something bad happens, and so that you have an orderly succession of the business. Estate planning is a part of that, but it's usually what happens after something has happened in terms of when you have to do something. There's also the consideration of insurance, life insurance, if the farm or farmers can afford to put something like that in place. I've kind of designated a couple of what I've viewed as unique issues facing farmers that other businesses don't have to deal with. And I think it's part of the reason for the declination in the number of farms. Number one is just dealing with weather and natural disasters. They've always got something to do or something to deal with. Dairy farmers in particular, it's 24/7. So where do you find the time to do something else? lack of cash flow and having a non-liquid asset, the land. It's beautiful. It's beautiful to look at, but it doesn't necessarily generate revenues. And a lot of banks won't lend on hard assets. They want to see cash flow. Mm-hmm. So that's a problem. Then the biggest item is the willingness of the next generation to stay on the farm. A lot of the young, you know, the next generation, when they, you know, they've had a chance, they've been exposed to, you know, higher education, for example, they face a dilemma. You know, the farm's beautiful, but do I really want that? Or do I want a real job, so to speak, where I have a, where I can also have a life? So those are kind of the issues I think that face the farm. And tell me to be quiet.
If I'm rambling too much here. Well, one of the things I'm curious about, and when you think of all, I mean, there's all obviously all these issues, and I think that, you know, you hit the nail on the head when you say that the first thing is that candid discussion with the family to basically say, where are we at and what's going to happen, you know, and really knowing the desires, the wants, needs, and desires of either the next generation and the current generation, because it seems to me that there certainly needs to be a level of planning that goes into, and it's going to take some time to really get all the ducks in a row, or cows in a row, in terms of what's going to happen. And so figuring out what that next step is. So for instance, hypothetically speaking, if, you know, a farmer says, you know, I'd really love for my son who has interest or daughter to take over my farm. But at the same time, there's always the cash flow issue, right? Or there's the kind of a perpetual debt in a sense that can go with farming in terms of having to keep current with equipment. Milk prices, you know, if it's a dairy, fluctuate. So one year it's like you're swimming in it, and then the next year you're not, right? So you're
but the one against- thing that doesn't fluctuate is there always seems to be a glut of milk. Even if the prices are high and you're making dollars, psychologically you're still dealing with the fact, well, I'm producing something that's important, but they're flushing it.
Yep.
So that creates a quandary.
Sure.
I don't know if this will be helpful to you, and we don't have to go through it now, but I actually have a worksheet that I use or have used that kind of gets all the facts out, the details, so that the family members are and the operators are aware of what they have, and from cash flows to lifestyle, that makes them think about these issues, their priorities, their goals, their objectives. And what it does is it's almost like a strategic plan that a regular business would have. And it really helps to guide the ship in terms of what the next step is. And I'll actually leave that with you.
Well, and like you said, it's, you know, people, it's a business like any other business. And so people need to address it that way. And there's a lot of various worksheets or planning documents that have been tried and true. As to how to make these types of transitions. So if, you know, I mean, what are things that, in kind of in lay terms, right? If we were to say to somebody, what are the steps that I can take just kind of in broad strokes to start to make this process happen?
Well, I think the first step is to sit down with the family and understand who you are, what you have, and what you want to achieve.
Yep.
And it sometimes it's hard to articulate. It's kind of like floating around because you don't have time to think about that. Mm-hmm. So you need to know what the issues are before you can deal with them. You could go to a lawyer or a tax accountant or a tax lawyer and say, you know, they can't just draft a panacea. It doesn't work that way. The vehicle has to fit the needs of the particular individuals. The one, you know, I talked about what differentiated the family farm from other businesses, you know, from natural disasters to the uniqueness of the properties.
Right.
The things that are similar to other businesses that have to be dealt with that oftentimes do lead to a catastrophe in the so-called farm auction because they've run out of money. And, you know, you're selling the stuff for, you know, you sell the cows for what you can get for them. And then, you know, the farm equipment's worth, you know, nickels on the on the dollar.
Sure.
Are the things that are fairly standard practice to all businesses are death.
Yep.
That's the estate planning aspect. Disability.
Yep.
Death and disability can be insured against, or they can be dealt with through appropriate agreements like buy-sell agreements. Disaster is something you just have to have a contingency plan. Divorce is always an issue. big issue, particularly where you have cash flow. If the operators are going through a marital dissolution, good luck. You know, how do you turn, how do you divide it?
Right.
And then finally, the thing that plagues every business, what do you do in the event of disagreement?
Right.
How do you solve that problem? So the mechanisms for transfer, a lot of things have been used. I mean, in, again, depending upon what the debt loads are, what the cash flow issues are, one of the things a lot of farms look at now are, and if you have the proper form and entity, it makes subsequent transfers easier. So the traditional way of doing business was people just own the farm in their own name, which means every time you want to transfer a piece of land, you might have to subdivide and you might have to deed the property and you're subject to Vermont transfer taxes, land gain taxes. And then, of course, there's always Uncle Sam looking over your shoulder with the state of Vermont with on income tax issues. So a lot of farms look at other entities, operating entities, whether it be a corporation, more preferably a sub-S corporation, which is where the incidence of taxation flow through, so you only have a single tax. More popular today are limited liability companies that are actually taxed as proprietorships or as partnerships. One tool that had been used, but it may not be around anymore, are family limited partnerships, which give the existing owners the ability to keep control, voting control, and restrict transfer, but also use significant discounts in terms of valuing the property as far as making transfers. Most family farms today, I would be willing to bet, if you were looking for a transfer plan, what would probably work best in my mind, and I've been doing this for over 40 years and I have a degree in taxation, a master's in taxation, is I wrote down about 50 different vehicles that you could use. If the family farm coming to me today, what I would be looking at is I'd be looking at cash flow. I'd be looking at, do you really want to continue the farm or do you want to liquidate it? In other words, do you want to, while you're still operating and while you still have a, you know, while you're still somewhat liquid or solvent, is it time to look for a buyer? And sometimes that buyer is the rich trust funder or hedge funder from guy from California who wants to move to Vermont and live the new life. And that's an out, that's an exit strategy. Is usually the best technique right now, and it may change, is, as I said, family limited partnerships. The 2704 rules that permit those are being looked at seriously by Congress. They are every year, and they could change. Right now, a husband and wife can each give away, because of the estate gift tax lifetime exemption exclusion, $5.4 million each. And there's portability provisions, which now mean that if you have two spouses and the properties are properly structured in terms of ownership, you can literally give away without tax $11 million almost. And if you properly plan and let it flow through your estate, you're going to get what's called a step up in basis. A lot of family farms are multi-generational. So, you know, they were inherited from, you know, great-grandfather to grandfather to current generation. So their so-called tax basis is probably very low. It's, you know, you think back to the 70s when you could buy a house for $38,000. Right. You know, now, you know, try to find something for $200. You know, it's just not going to happen. So if you have a farm, you know, with, 500 acres and with everything, it, you know, it's worth $1 million and your basis is zero, it means if you gift it, the recipients are going to take what's called a carryover basis. So if they turn around and have to sell it, they're going to pay capital gains tax on the difference. Capital gains tax with Vermont tax is going to be taxed. It's going up, but it's an effective rate of about both 30% to a third. So the question is, so we get $1 million, we pay off our debt, and we owe Uncle and the state of Vermont $300,000. Doesn't work. The best way probably is to have a plan in place with operating agreements through the LLC, with transfer of interest where, looking long-term and looking at the ages, and if you have a successor in mind, family members or someone else that will work, is let the asset pass through the estate. The zero basis gets stepped up to current value because it passes through the estate. There's no estate tax. You get a step up in basis for depreciation and amortization purposes, and on a subsequent sale, zero tax. If it's sold for that amount, if it's sold for $1.2 million, you're only paying tax on the $200,000 difference. Right. If it's sold for $800,000, you got a capital loss.
Sure. So now how does that, so when we're looking at this, say you have a scenario where, because I'm looking at some of the document that you provided here in terms of the planning aspects, right? And one of the pages is devoted to lifestyle plan. So now let's talk about retirement, right? So you've been running the farm for however many years, and you do have a successor, and you want to pass it through to them, and you also obviously want to figure out a way to mitigate the tax burden if possible. But at the same time, I would also like some liquidity or some sort of retirement so that I can, you know, benefit and go off and do some of the things I want to do, travel, so on and so forth. How do you kind of approach that and make sure that you can pass the farm on, but you can also still in some way, shape or form benefit from all that labor and work?
Well, a lot of farmers don't even have Social Security. They're exempt from Social Security. They don't have retirement plans because they don't have the cash flow to pay into a qualified retirement plan. So that's a dilemma. That's why you see a lot of 85-year-old farmers
right
out there, unless they happen to be gentleman farmers that have other sources of income. But there are a number of things that a farm can do, just like any other business. If you have a factory and it's on 50 acres and the factory really only uses 10 acres, mm-hmm. the other 40 acres doesn't add to the value, won't increase the value of the operating asset. So one thing they can consider doing, and to a certain extent, Shelburne Farms did this, is they wanted to preserve the property, but they knew that they needed to generate some cash flow. So they did subdivide and sell some properties to generate cash. And again, depending upon where you're located and the attractiveness of the property,
right.
that's a great way to generate revenues. The other thing a lot of farmers do or can do is there's help out there in terms of grants in some instances. Some farms also do long or short-term leases for part of their property to generate revenues. The typical equation is if you bring a new generation on and you got 200 milkers and you basically figure the cash flow per milker is X, how many new cows do you have to bring on to generate additional income? And that may be part of the, what's considered is do we grow the herd from 200 to 220 so that we can pay mom and dad some amount of money?
Sure.
Some of the advantages that farmers do have that others don't is, and again, it may just be subsistence, meeting subsistence needs, but it's, it goes way back to, historically farm families, multi generations of the same family lived on the same property in the same house. I mean, you used to see the houses in the front yeah. and they just extended way
right,
back.
Exactly.
You'd have 3-4 generations there is for all intents and purposes, they might not have additional housing costs.
Right.
Food is available
yep.
and, it's incremental income. It is interesting to me though, that, I was a couple of weeks ago, I won't mention names, but I was driving through the Northeast Kingdom and I stopped to get some ice cream and I talked to a funny guy who had his longtime farmer up there who had his grandkids with him and they were buying ice cream. And, he was basically saying, well, my farm's small compared to whoever it is up there. There's I think it's Pierre or St. Pierre, whatever, good operation with like close to 10,000 cows. He was talking to me about, the trips he and his wife were taking, and so it was coming from someplace.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, what's interesting though, in terms of what you're saying is it's a relatively complex issue. I mean, there's no silver bullet. Yeah. And really what it boils down to is planning. I think that as you've demonstrated with the documentation you provided, it's that you have to have a plan. You have to start that conversation And it seems to me that the sooner that those discussions happen in the family, the better, because then it gives people time to really figure out what's going to happen.
Otherwise, you're just throwing darts at the wall, in my mind. And it's true of most businesses. I also brought for you, which would be helpful, just a comparison of business entities that are usable and a checklist for operating in business agreements.
So is this, can we, would you be okay with us posting this? Maybe somewhere where people can access it?
Absolutely. Okay. And I'm not sure where I took it from. It's not original work on my part,
but it's something that you feel is representative
It's a starting point.
Yeah,
it's a starting point. There's no, you know, one size doesn't fit all. When you get to the estate planning issue and the financial, another piece.
Great. Perfect.
And then just the last piece, which I think is important, and it really gives you a sense of what you have. For example, some farmers don't realize, you think of farms, but that, you know, they may have a huge resource in terms of forest and timber that can generate revenues, and a lot of them capitalize. So it's knowing what you have in terms of assets, and this is kind of like a self-imposed, without using your tax accountant to figure out what your cash flows are and what your assets are.
Yeah.
So I think those will be helpful.
Yeah, and then, you know, obviously you get into these issues where once you start having the conversation, you think about, okay, if we need to increase the amount of milkers to generate additional revenue, that also means, well, we may not be able to parcel off some of the land because you may need that. So it's really just working through all these various issues and angles to figure out what's going to meet the needs of everyone involved.
You know, I mean, like any other business, it's all factually driven.
Sure.
You know, you can't just... there's no quick fix. There just isn't.
Yeah.
The one thing I do know is that most farmers that get into trouble, it's because they haven't properly planned. At least if you plan, you at least have a chance and you have an exit strategy. Yeah. And there are things you can do.
Yeah. And then also there's, you know, as I think the example of Shelburne Farms is, it's interesting. And obviously it's very different than what we're talking about with these small family farms. But the idea that conservation is, you know, on the top of the list for a lot of people in the state of Vermont. And we've worked with, through various foundations that we have worked with, say for instance, the High Meadows Fund, which is, you know, through the Vermont Community Foundation, and, you know, they are taking and preserving land and, or infusing capital to try some of these pilot farms to see what other uses there are of the land. So that may be somebody that's transitioning out, where then somebody like the High Meadows Fund may come in and say, oh, we could, you know, use this as part of the
conservation. That's basically the business plan at Shelburne Farms. That's why they're a 501c, is so that people get charitable contributions. And we are in a state that a lot of money has come into this state and people will give for those. One of the things I've seen in my experience, I was very active in the Boys and Girls Club over a period of years, and that is people that are giving large amounts no longer want to give to buildings. They want to give to programs.
Yeah.
And if you can show a program that, you know, deals with conservation, sustainability, there are people out there that will give. They're very committed to that. You know, and then of course you get into the whole new area of, I'm not even sure what it is, because there's so much language of, you know, sustainable farming, organic farming, and all this stuff, where basically, you know, this big issue now is, what does it all mean?
Right,
But that seems to be the direction of, you know, smaller farms and where they're going.
Yeah. Do you think it's helpful for farmers to talk to each other in this regard?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's, you know, one of the, just as an example, over the years I've represented a lot of auto dealers.
Yeah.
And one of the things I know is that they all belong to what's called 2020 groups, where they go to these conferences and they learn from, you know, their peers what they're doing, whether it's estate planning, you know, capital improvements, just, you know, two or three times a year they meet. I think it's a great idea, again, if they have the time. You know,
which is, we know, it's hard to come by in terms of the ag world. So,
we've had so much rain, you know.
Yeah.
Now there's a panic. I was talking to a farmer as a neighbor. I mean, he's on his tractor nonstop, you know, getting the hay.
Yeah.
He's got to cut the hay.
Yeah.
You know, before it rains again.
Exactly.
So,
So, well, this has been, I think, extremely helpful, and we'll hopefully we can get some of these documents up just so that people that are interested can, download or at least reference them to start the process. And, you know, I think to sum it up, it's again, as we've talked about, it's about setting that initial plan in place and just starting that conversation and figuring out what the future is going to look like. So Mike, where can people reach you if they have questions or actually want to start the process?
I am available, mm-hmm. and with farmers, lawyers are expensive, and these people have to, and professionals are expensive. You know, they need help. I have no problem sitting or meeting with someone, at least initially, to tell them where they ought to go, or at least what my opinion is. I'd be happy to do that without charge when I'm around. Maybe it's a way to give something back.
Well, I would imagine that would be.
And I have a website. My secretary put these in my. I usually use these to leave notes to my grandkids, but.
Perfect. So the website is, would it be the langrock.com?
Yes. And then just my name, just plug my name in.
Okay. Perfect.
Or mwool@langrock.com.
Okay. So, mwool@langrock.com is your email.
Yes.
Perfect. Well, that's great, Mike. And thank you so much. Oh. And that's really kind of you to be able to offer your services like that.
This was a pleasure. And your questions were terrific, actually. Thank you.
Thank you.
Made it easy.
Thank you for joining us on the third episode of Perspectives Podcast. It was really great to be able to speak with Mike Wool and have him shed some light on this bit of a complex subject of ownership transfer of a small farm. So please go online and look for the documentation that Mike provided us so that you can get that process started if you are interested in doing so. So thanks again, and hopefully you'll join us in our next episode.